Right, thanks very much. My name is Kim Keating, and I'm here from the Workers' Compensation Board. My title at the Workers' Compensation Board, I am one of the Safe Work Coordinators. What I do currently is I go and talk to employers a lot about disability management, program development, effective return to work strategies to help all workers get back to work following particularly a workplace injury, because I'm with workers' compensation. When Andrew asked me to speak at the Aging Worker Conference, at first I found it a little bit difficult because basically there's nothing new that applies specifically to aging workers. The same principles of a good disability management or return to work program in your workplace applies to all workers, including aging workers. Things like having a good prevention, workplace health and safety program, having flexibility built into your disability management program when workers are returning to work, very key. Good communication processes throughout the return to work process, and having worker involvement in the accommodation and return to work process, as well providing meaningful work to workers when they are fit to return to work applies to all workers, including aging workers. Essentially, when it comes to return to work, we don't have a certain grid that people workers fall under. If you're this age and you injure your back, you're going to need 1 week off of work, and then you're going to need a 4 week return to work program. If you're 50 years old, you're going to need 3 weeks off work and then a 6 week return to work program. There's nothing at all like that. Essentially, one size does not fit all, and it really has to be tailored to the individual's needs. I'm going to give you my question right now so that you can hopefully try to think about it throughout the presentation, and hopefully someone will be willing to share. Essentially, what I'd ask is that if there's someone in the audience or multiple people in the audience that would be willing to share a return to work success story that occurred within your workplace or in a workplace that you're aware of that involved an aging worker, I don't know exactly what that age is, an aging worker that had permanent restrictions as a result of a workplace injury, different things you did or something creative that you did in that particular situation, so that hopefully the group can learn from that particular instance in your workplace. So that's what to think about. Coming up with the presentation, I decided to start off with some, you know, hard and fast facts about workers' compensation legislation, as well as some statistics that we're seeing at workers' compensation. And then after speaking with Andrew last week about the presentation, I decided to embark on a non-scientific study at the Workers' Compensation Board. So it's non-scientific, this one. But in that, I talked to WC medical advisors about what they're seeing, trends that they're seeing in claims that they're reviewing, as well as WCB case managers that work with the claims hands-on with multiple workplaces, as well as employers. And then at the end, I came up with just some tips for employers with respect to return to work. In 2006, we came up with a new Workers' Compensation Act. It's not totally new, but there were some specific changes that affected the benefits aging workers received under the Workers' Compensation Act, and also some changes to how things are paid on claims and will affect employers. Ooh, there's some tape there. Essentially, one of the main changes is there are no longer maximum insurable earnings under the Workers' Compensation Act. Typically speaking, aging workers tend to be in a higher wage, earning a higher wage than younger workers in the workforce. As of January 1st, 2006, there is no longer a cap on the insurable earnings that a worker has. Prior to January 1st, 2006, if a worker was in, no matter what their age was, if a worker was injured in the workplace and was earning less than, it was $55,000 something per year, we would, if they were earning less, the cap was $55,000. If they were earning, say, $100,000, we would only pay them 90% of net based on the $55,000 cap. As of January 1st, 2006, if a worker was earning $100,000 in the workplace, we pay their workers' compensation benefits based on the full $100,000 of wage loss. Injured workers that are over the age of 61 years of age in the workplace are eligible to receive wage loss benefits through workers' compensation up to a maximum period of 4 years. Prior to 2006, we had a cap on workers' compensation benefits, whereby if you were over the age of 63 years of age working in the workplace, you were only entitled to a maximum period of workers' compensation wage loss of 2 years. So that changed. Also, permanent impairment awards that occur for injuries on or after January 1st, 2006, there is no longer a age-related reduction to those impairment awards that occur. So an impairment award under the workers' compensation system is a one-time lump sum payment for the permanent effects of an injury. So if you lost the tip of your finger, you would be assessed for a permanent impairment award. Prior to January 1st, 06, if you were over the age of 45 years of age, there was an age reduction of 2% for every year over the age of 45, up to a maximum reduction of 40%. As of January 1st, 06, that no longer happens. Andrew had this same slide this morning, but there's one extra year added, 2006, and as you can see, the trend of older workers' compensation claims is increasing. The numbers for 2007 are going to be coming out shortly, and we're expecting that trend to continue. Some of the age trends that we're seeing at the WCB are the time loss rate for workers over the age of 55 rose from 3.8 in time loss accidents per 100 full-time equivalent workers in 2000 to 5.3 in 2005. The 45-plus time loss rate, we saw no change. The 55-plus group, 35% of that group we're seeing are female workers. Twice as likely in the 55-plus group to have a WCB claim for a fall on the same level. So it doesn't mean that younger workers aren't falling at the same level. It just means that they're not submitting workers' compensation claims. So they're not requiring medical treatment or lost time from work. More likely to be injured in the healthcare and self-insured sector of the economy. So the 55-plus age group that we get workers' compensation claims tend to be employed in the healthcare sector or self-insured, meaning railways, government, the city of Winnipeg, province of Manitoba, federal government. Also, aging workers are twice as likely to get an occupational disease, such as hearing loss claims, exposure to asbestos, occupational cancers, less likely to get open wound injuries. And we are seeing an increasing number of backs, legs, and multiple body part injuries in older workers. They are less likely to injure their eyes, fingers, and hands in the workplace. In 2006, the average age of females that came through the workers' compensation system was 41 years of age, the median being 42. Here that thing is. Compared to an average of 38, the median being 38 as well, in the year of 2000. So we're seeing an increase there. Claims coming from older women are concentrated in healthcare jobs and the service sector, where there is an aging workforce. Younger female workers tend to work in sectors not covered by workers' compensation or in low-risk sectors such as the retail industry. In 2006, the average age of injured males was 38 years of age, the median age being 37, up from 36 years in 2000. So essentially, what the statistics are showing is that in comparison to younger workers, older workers are less likely to do something like lacerate their fingers or hands, less likely to get foreign debris in their eyes, or less likely to sustain a traumatic serious injury. Older workers are more likely to be diagnosed, though, with an occupational disease, such as hearing loss, work-related cancer claims, exposure to asbestos. Those all fall under the occupational disease category with workers' compensation. Also, older workers are more likely to sustain musculoskeletal injuries, including strains, sprains, and nonspecific repetitive strain injuries. There's also a correlation between the number of MSI, musculoskeletal injury claims, and occupational disease claims being reported to the WCB and the increasing number of older workers. So now we're going to kind of embark on my non-scientific study at the WCB. I started off by talking to some case managers that handle claims, in particular in the self-insured area and the healthcare sector. What the case managers reported to me was they often see in speaking of older workers, they're using the age of 55 plus to describe them. They're seeing that they have two different groups of workers over that age categories. One group that wants to be in the workplace because they love their job, they're there by choice, maybe they're already retired and they're there because they love the social aspect of work and they want to get back to work very, very quickly and are very involved in the return to work process right off the hop. The second group of workers are workers who are in the workplace because it's not a choice. They have to be there. Their pension, they have to boost their pension. They're not in a financial position to retire at this particular time, so they're there for survival reasons. Case managers also reported that they see an increase in severity in the aging worker claims that they receive on their caseloads. They're also reporting longer restrictions are in place as a result of the injuries that are occurring. So as opposed to having restrictions of no lifting greater than 20 pounds for a 3-week period, they're seeing those restrictions in place for an 8-week period, as well as more severe restrictions as a result of the workplace injury, which makes it more difficult for the employer to accommodate those restrictions. Then I went and talked to the medical advisors in our healthcare department, in particular Dr. Cosman. Dr. Cosman reports to me that they are not seeing an increase in severity with respect to the mechanism of injury, but the same trauma, the same load to cause the injury. Same mechanism, same injury, same load, but the effects that has on an older worker are much greater than the effects of the same trauma or load have on a younger worker. Dr. Cosman provided me with the analogy of vehicles and driving down the road in the spring during pothole season. You have a brand new SUV, you're driving down the road, you hit a pothole, you have good shocks, good suspension in your car, you drive over a pothole in the road, you don't even notice that pothole. You have an older car, it's rickety, the shocks are out of whack, the same pothole hits that old car, and the effect of that trauma caused by hitting that pothole will be greater to the older car, may even cause permanent damage as a result. His analogy indicates as people get older, their threshold to sustain load decreases with time as a result of degenerative wear and tear on the body. The combined influences of the workplace accident acting in combination with degeneration or pre-existing conditions make typical disability management guidelines for recovery very blurred. Other conditions that further will reduce an individual's threshold to sustain load are systemic diseases, such as diabetes, arthritis, and stress. Severity of trauma. So the conclusion from Dr. Cosman is severity of trauma is not increasing, but as people age, their threshold to sustain trauma lessens, making recovery, making a full recovery less likely and more prolonged. The recommendations from our WCB healthcare department for employers are prevention programs. Lessen the load employees are required to lift. If you already have a prevention program that has a lifting restrictions and lifting assistive devices for employees, and you have those policies in place, it's important to enforce them as well as to have ongoing education in your workplace to work towards prevention. As well, wellness programs to improve the overall health of all of your employees. The effects of degeneration can be reduced by health and fitness programs and in particular core body strength. Feedback I receive from employers is sometimes contradicting, actually. Some employers, particularly some in the healthcare industry, report to me that they are running out of light duty jobs to accommodate their aging workers. They have so many with permanent restrictions already, and now here's the WCB calling them up with another worker with long-term or permanent restrictions, and they're just running out of light-duty jobs. Too many aging workers are taking the prime light-duty positions in their workplace. This just, in my opinion, reinforces that they really need to think outside of the box It increases the importance of thinking outside the box with your disability management program, looking at bundling duties that can make an appropriate position for a worker. Also, employers, contradicting to what they say earlier, they can't find enough staff to fill positions in their workplace. So they're struggling. They have all these workers off on workers' compensation, but they can't find accommodations for them in the workplace because the prime accommodation positions are taken. But then they're struggling also on the front end to find staff to fill positions. So again, getting back to thinking outside the box when it comes to accommodating workers in the workplace. One example that I have from a case manager is a 75-year-old healthcare aide working in rural Manitoba in a personal care home. He received a claim. She was lifting patients that weighed upward more than 200 pounds in the workplace. He talked to the employer. It's unlikely this worker is going to be able to return to work. Talked to the employer. Had she talked about retiring? The employer said, retiring? This is our new employee. We just filled the position with her. Because they're struggling, particularly I find in rural Manitoba. Employers need to get creative in identifying light duty jobs. Return to work kind of suggestions or ideas that I have, and as they apply to aging workers. As I said at the beginning, the same return to work principles that apply to young workers apply to aging workers. Return to work plans really need to be based upon the individual and the individual's needs. With more aging workers in return to work programs, the need to have more flexibility built into a disability management program is important. The majority of aging workers, the workers that we get on claim that have permanent restrictions as a result of their workplace injury, they don't want to end their career on workers' compensation benefits. That's not how they want to exit the workplace after a 20 or 30 year career with one employer. There are very negative psychological effects on their community, as well as financial implications in terms of their pension and benefits. That's not how someone wants to end their working life. As well, also, the majority of injured workers or aging workers, all workers actually, also don't want to end their successful career of 20 to 30 years in the modified duty room at the employer's place of business. So there's a stigma attached to that as well. So kind of my successful strategies that I'd like to see more of employers doing, with all workers, not just aging workers, one, involve the worker in the return to work process. Value the worker for their years of experience and knowledge of the workplace. Examples of successful return to work for aging workers would be using their knowledge and experience to train new staff in the workplace, help develop training materials for new staff, working in sales, providing estimates to customers, doing assessments of clients or patients so that for other workers on a preventative basis. Those are just some examples that I have and have seen in different workplaces, but I'm hoping that someone in the audience will be brave enough to share something positive happening in their workplace around return to work. And that's pretty much the end of my discussion.